All right, call order, regular meeting and public hearing in North Bend Planning Commission, Thursday, March 13th, 2014, at City Hall. And this is February 27th, 2014, Planning Commission meeting. Motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any changes, corrections? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion approved. Public comment on non-agenda items.
Travis Bridgman said hello to me, allowing me to be smart. I actually want to bump ahead and comment on an agenda item. I'm just in a learning class right now, a choir class. So, can I just make a comment that it's actually...
Oh, for an item on the agenda. And you're saying you can't stay with it, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a complicated issue, this whole marijuana thing. However, there's a whole world of very talented people working on it. I advise to leave the bylaws and the super laws to them. As a city, we should figure out what works, what's going to work. How can we kind of co-partner with this business, as we should co-partner with every business and every citizen? Figure out how it's going to work, make sure it's going to work for them. So go through, and versus looking at figuring out ways that it won't work, there's thousands of them. There's just a few ways that it's going to work. So if we focus on those ways that we can ensure their prosperity, their longevity, we want there to be one that comes in and basically provide revenue and city services forever, to have them succeed well. There's a few locations, there's probably one that's going to work right. So if we just focus on what are we allowed to do, how can we best do that, abiding by all the laws from the state, from the feds, and then to kind of partnership and mentor those people that are going to come in and make sure that one business comes in and they stay there, but they provide their clinic with giving us revenue and resources for the citizens. So basically just focusing on what we can do to shift it from everything else to, okay, how is this going to work? It's somehow going to work eventually. There's going to be some kind of pot farm, and they're going to make a bunch of money, and they're going to have a lot of traffic, and it should be as civic as it can be. So how do we want that to be? And let's make it work.
Great. Thanks, Travis. No one else from the public, we'll move on. Review and recommendation of amendments to residential design standards in North Bend Municipal Code 1834.
If you guys hopefully have been keeping up with your email, there's been some additional changes to the copy that you received in the packet last week. And those changes have been from Rob, and we also made an additional change this afternoon that we added that we can talk about. Do we want to talk about that first, and then we can go on to open up for questions on how you guys want to review it?
So, Commissioners, my thought was I've only got a few remaining questions, and I hope you're okay with the email that I sent. I hope you had a chance to look at that. Staff did incorporate a lot of my comments into the version that's in front of you, so if there's something there, you know, we'll need to back that up. Most of it, of course, was typos or board changes I think you're probably okay with, so we can go from there. So my thought is perhaps discuss what staff made a change to, and then a few questions and any questions that you might have, and then put a motion on the table and go from there. Does that work for you? Great, sure. Okay. Megan, what you guys change that we might not do?
On page 6, there should be some red line edits. And we added a section that allows the deviation from standard. So if anybody, if they come into a situation and let's say their parcel is extremely narrow and they're not able to have their front door they're building oriented facing the street and they have to go sideways. Because of the size of the parcel, there's no other way to orient the building than Jenna would have the ability to address them on a case-by-case basis and make an exception for them in this case. So we didn't have that in there previously, so we added this section.
To be sure that all of C is a new section, mm-hmm. right? And so there's a combination of red and black line. But even the black line wasn't there
previously. The red line was just some edits that we provided in our earlier draft.
Mm-hmm. That should all be red.
Okay. Right. And this is very similar to it's called a modifications to standards in our landscape regulations. But it's basically the same process, that there's always situations that you encounter that applying the standards as they read really does not work on the site. And so this just provides a little bit more flexibility for staff in reviewing those applications while still ensuring that it's overall in conformance with the standards.
And the choosing the word deviation over modification is to ensure it doesn't conflict with something else in the code that defines modification?
No, I just thought, because you're deviating from what's required. Okay. Modification of standards to me sounded like we're going to go in and change the way the standard actually reads itself.
Gotcha. Yep. Okay.
Is everybody okay with that addition? And the other thing I wanted to point out I completely took out the preamble section, and I took the second paragraph and I added it into the beginning of the purpose section on page 2. And I'm not sure if I called that out in the email or not, but I want to make sure you guys are aware of that.
It was the first thing in the email that I saw, and I read it myself, and I thought, this is much better.
Okay, perfect. Rob, were there anything in the questions that I sent back to you that you wanted to bring up?
Just a couple of items, and because I forgot my note sheet, I can't. I'll rely on you to point us to the correct section here where I'm going to bring up an item.
Okay.
So the first one was, I had a comment in there asking about porches being required on all cottages where we don't require them on other single-family products. And Megan, I appreciate your response there. If I understood it, it was kind of along the lines of, well, we really don't want to require them on all single-family.
Right.
I get that, and I agree. Mm-hmm. My comment and concern was actually the reverse.
Okay.
Why require them on all cottages? We don't require them on all any other type of housing. And isn't that an undue burden? And particularly when we're looking for some variation and we're looking for price point, and we're trying to help people here. And so, and I would say that in general, a lot of the comments that I sent back are a lot of driven by thinking around what are the types of things that add cost, drive up price point, particularly in the type of product where we're trying so desperately to hold those prices down so we get more affordable housing. So this one seemed like an easy one. I get that we're looking for some architectural life in the house, but just as in any other house, I think we've got that covered in a number of other sections. So that was my point there.
And that's the section he's talking about is under building entries on page 10, item B. And the first long paragraph that you read there is for single family, and then below it calls out, you know, cottage homes. For cottage homes, each unit shall include an attached front porch, not less than 80 square feet minimum, with a minimum depth of 6 feet. So that's the requirement he's referring to.
What I would suggest to the other commissioners, if you're interested in going down this path, would be perhaps wording that would be, instead of shall include, would be are encouraged.
One thing to point out is I think that's also a provision in our performance standards for cottages, which the council recently acted on. So to do something other than that would create an inconsistency with those performance standards.
I have an issue with just then the grayness of that. Either we do or we don't. We are strongly encouraged.
Yeah, I don't think those words are good. Why would we deviate so much from the single family? 70%, then it seems like you'd have some options of price points if you had a portion. I mean, it seems like that kind of gets at what you're talking about a little bit, Rob. But, I mean, mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like we have a choice anyway. So.
It would still be required through the performance standards. But I think the intent of that is that the smaller the unit gets and the more dense that you get, the more important design becomes. And so if you've got already a basic box, then it becomes much more plain looking if you don't have a porch to give that much more depth and dimension.
Yeah, you and I are not on the same page, have been, because of the cottage housing concept. To me, the cottage housing concept adds value to the city because it's not inexpensive housing. It's expensive per square foot, in my mind. Yeah. It is everywhere that I've seen it be presented. It's cottage housing. It's infill. It's kind of the land is kind of struggling a little bit, and they come in with this idea that makes better use of the land than you would be able to use it with a standard single-family type product. Mm-hmm. So we kind of go back and forth, I think, as this topic continues to come up, with the idea that cottage housing should be entry-level starter home type housing versus empty nesters who are writing a check, right? Who want to be able to walk to the grocery store. Who want to be able to have an occasional guest. Not necessarily have this, you know, single parent with three children trying to figure it all out. So there's the dance.
Well, you know, you can assure that I'm not at the dance. I'm suggesting that I want the opportunity for all of those to be addressed. I want the opportunity for the empty nester. I want the opportunity for the higher end smaller home. But I also want the opportunity for the lower cost home that is an entry level price. So I'm looking at the broader. Scott, I appreciate what you said around 70%. I would go that way as well. I don't feel strong enough about this that I want to debate it all night. I wanted to see how you guys feel. If you're amenable to a change, great. Otherwise, we can move on. But it doesn't seem consistent to me to say, you in the 5,000 square foot house, you don't need a porch. But you, Mr. 1200, you have to have a porch, which goes again to the price per square foot, right?
And I would say it's not a square footage focal point. It's more of a style, character. The stuff that was built on every Main Street in the USA in the 1920s, it was an expensive square footage porch because the roof came out of the top of it. And it was like, holy cow. Like that was part of the lifestyle. You know, you open the front door and it's the porch and everybody's on the porch after dinner or whatever.
Or in any number of homes right here in our downtown area, you've got a stoop.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't want to say you're bad. You've got a stoop.
Right. Yeah.
So that's where my thinking is.
Yeah. I'd love to come back to it. I mean, I think everybody knows that cottage housing is one of my buttons. I love it, and no one's doing it here yet. And the builders have come in, developers have come in and said, hey, can we just do this? So then it's like, well maybe you can. We'll build you a little, we'll build 1,200 feet, but then we'll blend it with a 5,000 foot on the other end of the street. And now all of a sudden, we've got some maturation and nothing like cottage housing.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'll keep raising my hand when the time comes. But I'm comfortable with the language as it's written.
As is. Gotcha. As is.
We are checking currently to see if there is language in the existing cottage standards, in the performance standards, that requires that.
Yeah, I didn't recall that being in the performance standards, but you could be very correct on it.
It may not, so. But it sounds like.
But it sounds like there's not support for changing it, so.
Yeah, and I would go with lumping it in with the, not differentiating, putting the same requirement of the 70%. I think that's reasonable.
And you're amenable to that?
Mm-hmm.
And Jim used
to. So is that one out of seven houses kind of concept in your head?
Yeah.
Every seventh house doesn't have a porch?
Doesn't have to.
Have to. Doesn't mean it won't. Doesn't have to.
And your minimum.
Okay.
Okay, so we're just scratching that last sentence then.
So what we wanted to do is to be consistent with, right, the 70%.
Maybe just add
single family and cottage, yeah.
Yeah.
So is the cottage that you mentioned earlier, Mike, is that, that it doesn't, says 70%?
It doesn't look like it's in there in the current. What I don't know about is we did the cottage amendments recently that the council acted on. That's not on the ordinance attachments are not on the website yet, so we can't confirm that, but I don't think that part of it changed.
No, it's definitely not something that changed in the end.
Yeah, so it looks like it maybe is not in there.
So if it was there, it would have been very early on and didn't pay any attention to it. So here then, so single family developments and cottages, is that what you suggested, Scott, in the first sentence, or where?
I think we just throw it right up front in cottage homes. For single family developments.
Or does it even need to, I mean,
does it need to have either?
Does it even need to be either?
Yeah, I guess.
Mike, so. I mean, do we, single family development, does that not cover?
I would say cottage? Single family and cottage developments, that way it's clear.
Single family and cottage developments. Okay, that's in the first sentence under B, and then strike the last sentence or in its entirety.
Actually, it doesn't necessarily need to say and cottage because the section as a whole says single family and cottage residential.
Right, and that's not
so
add.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll start that with a minimum. Only at 70%.
Let me reverse it. Well, since we go to the trouble of calling the section single family and cottage, it would almost. And in C, we say C, single family and cottage performance standards.
That would be consistent. I think under D, then, you'd probably want to say get rid of for single-family developments just so that it doesn't create confusion about whether it applies to single-family and cottage.
Yeah, that's true. Are there other pieces in this section that distinguish requirements between cottage and single-family? Or is calling it out anywhere repetitive?
I think there are
two or three. Yeah. Setbacks.
But for the most part.
Yeah. So what's your final thought, yes or no?
I would, unless we're calling it out separately, I'd get rid of saying single family developments. Just so it's clear that it applies to both.
Okay. You just start with a minimum. So we're striking from the first sentence for single family developments, capitalize the A, so that it now starts to read a minimum at 70%, blah, 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 and we struck the last sentence.
And then doing the same under D below.
Starting with multiple people. All right, so D we strike for single family development. Thank you. The next one was around the siding. I just put the question to you about it. It just gave me this feeling that it's so specific around we're looking for a 6-inch relief horizontal, you know, piece of wood and no vinyl, right? And the impression that I took from it was, we really don't want anything but. And I thought that seemed a little strong, but I didn't quite know what to soften it with other than something to the effect of suggesting that brick or stone are very acceptable materials.
natural.
Point of clarification, it is architectural grade brick or stone accents as appropriate.
But that's an accent versus the actual body. Yeah, that's
cedar shake should be stored in that. Page 12, it's section 2A, materials and color, section 2.
We could get rid of the accents in there. So it would just say cedar shake, singles, board and batten, and architectural grade brick or stone. We don't even need as appropriate.
That would work for me. Mm-hmm.
You're striking accents as appropriate.
Yeah, the whole section to me is kind of when you start getting down that road of you've gone past design standards to, you know, color and texture.
And this is a guideline rather than a standard here. Right. This is talking about may rather than shall.
So, how are you suggesting that the second sentence read?
It says clapboards may be complemented with cedar shake, singles, board and batten, and architectural grade or brick, grade brick or stone.
So, I think the front of the sentence implies also the complement. It still says that it's you're working off of the. Let's see, if it started...
Other appropriate materials may include...
Yes, that sounds... And following that, so the second sentence would be, other appropriate materials may include cedar shakes, shingles, board and batten, and architectural grade brick or stone, period. Follow that?
Yes.
Okay with that?
Does architectural grade brick clearly differentiate between brick? And I'm not clear.
Probably not. This is all just
brick and stone.
Relic language here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We can shake that out.
Strike architectural.
I know it's important with a roof shingle. I haven't seen it applied to.
Yeah, good point.
But I'm willing to learn.
And brick or stone.
I trust you on this one. All right, so I think the sentence is now, other appropriate materials may include cedar shakes, shingles, board and batten, and brick or stone.
No nails?
I guess, actually, that and architectural can be, and in front of the architectural would be struck. Board and batten.
Brick and stone.
Or stone.
Okay, yeah.
You don't want to allow straw bales?
I'd love to see it, but I don't think I'm going to get this.
And this, again, isn't limiting it to that.
Yes, from my perspective, it just seemed like we were saying, if you come in with us, okay, it's not this, we're going to frown on it. Mm. And to me, this language now says there's a variety of acceptable materials, but what we don't like is vinyl. That's what I see in it now. Right. All right. Thank you. Page 18. Page number in my was making a comment about shall versus is, and you were saying you didn't think is was the right word. Fortunately, I'm not remembering the specific reference. Do you have the comments?
Thank you.
was the section it was in?
Page 18, section 3, last paragraph. All structures shall.
My 18 is now about parking, so we're.
Section 3.
Building mass and scale.
Building mass and scale.
Your top page.
Last. It's now much earlier.
Last paragraph. That's good.
Structure shall have maximum every day.
Yeah, I think that's. I'm assuming that's what it is.
Oh,
there we go.
Page 18, 3, last paragraph. 18. And you said proposed strike shall be in favor of is.
Well, there's a shall be encouraged, which is a kind of a, what do you call that?
Well, that's the one. Mm-hmm. It shall be encouraged may not.
How does that?
That's the thing. Thank you. Found the one. I'm still lost on what page it's on. So I'm looking at the new handout. So yeah. Can you tell me what is the is in the building?
There it is. 17 on the new handout. Last paragraph under section 3. Mix of density and building types shall be encouraged.
Is. Just
change that to are encouraged. Or is, yeah.
Is B. Hey, let's leave that B.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm still, which was the specific? It's, oh, okay.
All structures.
Yes, that's the one.
Okay.
Is encouraged.
Is encouraged is.
Yes.
Okay.
Got it. Okay.
That wasn't crazy. I may not be able to find it, but it wasn't crazy.
The statements in this document just always puzzle me. Like,
okay. Now, the only big one that I've got left is which is my slideshow. So, commissioners.
You didn't say it was your. No wonder it doesn't work.
Yeah. Commissioners will recall that. I brought this up when we did the design standards before, that I believe that not allowing the front entry door of a home in a multifamily situation to ever face into the parking area is not a good choice.
Say that again.
So, the can you please do the section?
May I? You're saying you should never allow the entry door to face the parking.
No, I'm saying that's what's the way that it's written. Yeah. Is to not allow that an entry beyond to a parking.
Oh, is that right?
And so, for instance, I sent Megan earlier today about 8 pictures, all on Orchard Healy, all the one little loop essentially around Sideview Park. 4 or 5 different complexes, all with different land constraints, all of them built with homes essentially opening onto the parking area. And I believe that in some instances, it's entirely constrained by the property. In other instances, it's the convenience for the property. Some of them are certainly not the most beautiful looking, overall aesthetically pleasing pieces, and actually some of them I think look pretty darn good. But therefore, to ban it, I think, with when we're talking about really so much infill, is that you're making it very difficult for building to utilize the land. And it's going to compromise in many instances, I think, a minimum of units, if not make it rather difficult to construct what would otherwise be a nice product for, again, those who are looking for that type of a home. So, for instance, if you've got a home facing the river, and you're enjoying that you have your deck in your patio overlooking the river, and we're saying
change.
No, but you know, that means your front door's got to be there. That means we're either driving people around to the other side of the building, or we're going to face forcing to put the parking on the riverside and have more to the street. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, well, I agree with that.
And Parkside Townhomes, one of the first ones I cited, and that I know very well because I have a unit there. The rear yards on them either face to the park, or they create a small alcove of rather, you know, private space, which the residents very much like. And they're certainly willing to trade entering, you know, from the drive lane, you know, to have that modicum of privacy. Could it be done differently, that particular parcel? Sure. At a cost, I think, of some units and a total loss of any ability for buildings.
Well, you'll end up with more paved surface.
Yeah, you will.
Because you've got to pave around all sides of the building to make it all go together. So I guess I'm curious, where do you think the language initially came from?
A lot of this comes from Snoqualmie Ridge Development Standards.
Yeah. And I objected to it there.
So we brought some pictures of how this kind of plays out. And the intent is to maintain that public appearance of the development and allow it to also to integrate with development around it. So particularly where it's...
Question. Are we talking about single-family and cottage only? Or
no, this is multifamily specifically.
Thank you.
So we can pass these around. Did you have these on the computer?
We don't have those on the computer.
Okay.
We have rocks on the
computer. So these are just some examples of Snoqualmie Ridge, a few examples from Redmond and Issaquah of what the intent of that is, and it's to ensure that the development orients to the street. So you don't have a wall, a big fence line against the sidewalk in the back of units.
Agreed. What is the primary difference between Snoqualmie Ridge Master Plan Community, Redmond Ridge Master Plan Community, and the City of Parkland?
Well, some of these examples are not in a master plan community. They're just general development. And the idea is to integrate rather than kind of cloister and segregate to adjacent land uses.
Well, I mean, I think the great thing that Snoqualmie Ridge does is that you can't tell the difference between multifamily and single family being next to each other. And I think a big part of that is not having that, having the gap of parking, for example, right in front and right next to maybe another single family. So that it's sort of continuing that neighborhood feel.
So here's an example of what we're trying to avoid. That's just where you get a typical garden apartment complex that walls itself off from the street. And
versus this.
Yeah.
That's your alternative.
Yeah.
So that picture
still
you held up, though, there, Mike, they are. In essence, oriented to the street. That's the backyard.
That's the backyard,
right.
Yeah. So there's no connection, no.
Face, but that's not about where the parking is.
Yeah.
But then the alternative is that's the inside. So, again, it doesn't orient really to, you can't see the entrances. You see carports and driveways and parked cars.
Right. So, but in that particular instance that you're holding up, I would totally support that if they flipped and had the front doors facing the street where the homes are already facing, that would be entirely reasonable. And to have the parking as it already is in the rear.
Yeah.
Right? Totally support that. But that's not the situation that I'm referencing the many situations that we have where the parking is actually interior. Parkside, townhomes, Park Place townhomes, where the parking is actually interior to the parcel. The exterior is the building structures. But they're not facing a street. They're facing either another property line, a park, in many instances. And I'm asking, so what are you going to, what is the desire to drive those to change the building? And so in that instance, to you would have to loop around the outside of them with the parking. I would assume.
You wouldn't have to.
Common place between them with walkways, right?
You can orient to the internal street. The intent of the standard here is just that that be built really as a street and not a parking lot. So that primary entrances shall face either a primary circulation route, internal circulation route built as a public street or open space. Primary pedestrian entrances shall not face driveways, alleys, or parking areas. So it's trying to just again.
So keep help, it. So Wells, help me with just the thought of the language. So again, let's try and picture Parkside, which is one of the pictures that I. Can you pull up? Yes. It's probably the first one.
Does that look like it?
Yep, that's it.
Okay.
All right. So I didn't do a real. I don't have back far enough, but if you could help interpret for me. So you've got a building of, say, four units connected, and this is the interior drive lane and the driveway in front of their garage. And across from them, where we're sitting, is another building with the same orientation, so that the drive lane that you're referring to is indeed between the buildings, between the front doors, and the driveways are there.
That very well may meet our standards with some additional improvements. So what that's missing is the public sidewalk, or a sidewalk. Mm-hmm. It's you walk out your front door, and when you're past your little porch area, you're just in the big parking lot.
Uh-huh.
So if that were to provide a sidewalk, then it could conceivably meet the standards.
Well, I love the word conceivable.
Well, I don't have the details of it right now. But.
Yeah. So what you're saying is where on the right is the raised curb protecting the small front yard. If instead we've got a sidewalk, I assume our standard is to hold a 5-foot sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've reduced the 10-foot front yard in half.
Just took out the roadies.
Or I pushed the building back further. If I've got the space to push it back further, and I don't really have a usable rear patio. So again, I mean, I'm driving the point hard because it's one that does concern me. I get what you're saying, and I can see where this could help, but I'm where is the interplay between what is circulation route and my driveway and what's being considered a parking lot and open under the parking lot. See, to me, the doors, it's got a sidewalk in front of it. Yes, it's right to the asphalt. So does it or does it not?
Well, that would not meet our sidewalk standards. But if that were constructed as the primary circulation route in the development with sidewalks,
yeah,
it would meet that provision.
So,
but I think the other.
I think you said that earlier. So that what you're saying is that the circulation route here has to be built to city roads, so it needs to be regular road section, sidewalk, and presumably planter strip between. Is that correct?
It says built as a public street, so.
Okay. So now I'm 10 feet closer to that building. I no longer have a parking pad available in front of the unit. Not all the units do, but some do. And the sidewalk's probably at the door.
You still have to meet your density requirements, so.
Well, or I can build half the units.
Yeah.
Right. And now it's not a tenable project. So.
Or you're some multiples of fewer units.
Yeah.
Which takes another fact the other way and turns it something else.
I know Snoqualmie Ridge is not the only case out there, but if you go back to Snoqualmie Ridge, I think that's proof that it's a viable scenario.
It's a great, and as you know, as everyone here knows, I was a developer on Snoqualmie Ridge, and I think it's a wonderful community, and I think it's got a lot of great product, and I love all of the multifamily product up there. What I would say, though, is that its main advantage is that it was all raw land built in a master plan community where you could plan around that and make allowances for that. And I feel that here in our community, we're dealing with too much small parcels that infill to take that sweeping hand. So similar to the sort of language that you added that took care of a few of the other concerns that I had, that gave some allowance. That's what I'm saying. We need better malleability here. I support the notion of that staff is pushing for and looking for that aesthetic and looking for that orientation. Totally get that. And when we're talking about a building actually facing the public street, over 90%, I'm right there with you. I don't know how to handle I've got a street here and I've got a river there.
And that's again where that deviation process comes in, that we can consider factors like that.
Yeah. But I don't have a comfort level with the way the language here is written that deviation process is ever going to be accepted. I'm concerned about that, and I don't know how else to express it.
A question, and I don't want to get us too far off of our agenda, but I know Kirkland and I want to say Bothell both had sections of their code basically entitled infill because they were trying to encourage it. So it was almost like a separate process depending on the zoning, which you could, the developer could come in and say, hey, you know, I can build two houses here, or if you work with me, I can build six. That whole conversation happened inside this process called infill. And I don't know if that's something you're familiar with, or we can add it, because if we're bringing density into the city, that's by definition, that's what's going to be. Mm-hmm. All the stuff we've got active now is on flat land. It's nobody's grazing. It's all it was before that. This stuff, we try to get anywhere near this, around it, Park Street, for example. Maloney Grove has some established homes. Anytime you start playing around, I wonder if we could add future something that allows that focus on infill product.
Well, I think regardless of whether it's infill or a raw green site, the important factor, and this applies whether it's multifamily or single family, is that it needs to still relate to the public realm. What we don't want is this scenario where this is the inside and the outside is the big wall.
Right.
So that doesn't do the public realm any benefit to have just blank garage doors and fences and so forth. So that is the key purpose of that standard.
Which, if any, of the developments, the communities that I sent pictures of, would be allowed to be constructed under this?
Well, again, with some modifications to address that sidewalk issue. And I'd have to look at the pictures. So that one, for instance, they could conceivably bring the building up, put the parking in the rear, and it would meet the standard.
Okay, so they lose the access to the
river. Or parking to the side.
I'm sorry, I just got out of it.
You can take a look down there and search.
And in that case, we also have provisions about relationship to the shoreline in our shoreline master program regulations that could trump this section.
That's just for the help in the locating. There's another image. That would be Park Place, which is on
Park Street. The complex has a street address from Park Street.
So the entry into that is a driveway, a couple of units on it, and then a circular parking.
So the, I think the key provision is how does it engage the public street? Mm-hmm. So a lot of these, I think, are kind of tucked in back behind other parcels. Yeah. And so that, we would consider in reviewing that, that it's, sometimes it's not possible to do a full public street to access a small site like that. Mm-hmm. But how does that particular project engage the street? Is in some circumstances, it can't engage the street because of the location. Mm-hmm. In other circumstances, there's a front edge along the street, and that's where this provision is going to apply. How are you orienting that building that's adjacent to the street?
Yeah, I guess, again, my fear is strictly laid out what I would see happening here. This is a very crude. So Park Street coming along here, you've got a drive lane, and so you've got units here, and then essentially around, right, this, so you've got the one drive lane with the units there. If we said, okay, for that connection that we're looking for, I need a sidewalk, I need a planter strip and a sidewalk access, and I just wiped out three buildings. And then I would be able to, some way or another, build probably the majority of the rest of them in there. Again, though, ensuring that I had sidewalk and planter strip. And it's 10 foot of space built to a city standard in private development, and I'm not sure what it gains. It's great to have that sidewalk there. It's great to have the separation between the sidewalk and the street. But doing that...
I understand your concern being that the built as a public street, and that, I think, is not necessarily the intent. We're not trying to get a 60-foot right-of-way within an apartment complex. We could change the language in there that we talk about an internal circulation route with sidewalks consistent with this, the requirements of this section. And that would address the same intent that you're still maintaining kind of a public realm even.
Yeah. I mean,
we just put up a gate for normal public. Save the sidewalks. Put up a gate.
I like the idea of a sidewalk, but I don't know that planter strip is necessarily that beneficial because you're not having the speeds that you're having on it. Rarely use the planter strip for separation.
Yeah.
And you're taking up a lot of space. So
it goes to aesthetics.
It does go to aesthetics.
The other. City.
Well, right, but I think it's very parcel, like I agree, it's very parcel driven. If you have a narrow parcel, it kind of forces you to kind of do certain things like this. There was one aerial that had like a triangular thing, and I think that's very negative. The reason being because when you go inside, you've just taken away all the green space for the benefit of the public driving by, not for the people who are living there.
Yeah.
And so I think it's kind of just like how does the equation of what you can fit on the type of space you have. I mean, it's a hard thing to draw a line on.
I like the intent. I'm just wondering, is there anything with the doors set so far back that I didn't see in the standard that you would want the doors more presented up front? The only thing I see is that the trim is required, but I don't see anything as far as...
I think we do have a porch and stoop provision in there.
For example, the garage would need to be set back from the wall, the front wall of the home. That's for multifamily, it's behind. Yeah, it's behind or underneath. Let's see. Okay. On the next page. To the side or the view of the building.
This in my continuum is going wider streets, adding sidewalks, we're having
discounting the value of the yard.
You're going to lose it somewhere. You're going to lose it in the yard. And
that's what I don't like about this.
what we're not allowing within these is that frequently we're better off with sidewalk on street and keeping all the green space intact behind. So otherwise, we're creating this very small.
If it were
spots for foliage struggles.
If I were starting from scratch with things, I would connect our trails to every neighborhood. And once you're in the neighborhood, you're on your own, but you don't have a 20-foot wide thoroughfare running in front of a house. It's frustrating because we're creating this whole concept of vehicular movement at a higher rate of speed, and then we're going to put two sidewalks on either side of that road to encourage people to get close to the cars. It doesn't make any sense.
You should have been there to speak to council last week when I added back to the pavement. So, Mike, I heard you made suggested perhaps something to soften the public street.
Yeah, we could take out that language that talks about internal circulation route built as a public street, and we could say internal circulation route built consistent with the sidewalk provisions in these standards.
We're on page
17.
That provision for internal routes could be the
same. 5A, is that correct? Which is now page 18 in my.
That's 10 feet. Parking
garages, carpool surface, is that the right section?
Well, it's in a couple sections, so there's also four, section four in the second paragraph.
Yeah, so it's the build is a public street. It's. So what would be your compromise? Am I able to wrest one from them?
Can we leave it at internal?
You guys, where are you? I mean, if the three of you don't see this as an issue, who doesn't need to look for language on the table?
I'm okay with the front door being the primary access, but I can agree with you.
I'm
looking for flexibility.
If we strike constructed to public street standards.
So in the first instance, in four, second paragraph, you're saying strike built as public street.
Correct. So in a circumstance where it's not public, if this particular neighborhood is a gated neighborhood, well, by definition, it's not public.
Well, the point is none of these are. This is right. Not a public, but the language is saying, when I've got to build this private circulation around the public street standard, that's what I'm objecting to. All right, and so that's in four, and then in five.
So before we leave that, though, I think it's important still to reference that the sidewalks are required. So section four, primary pedestrian entrances shall face either a primary circulation route, an internal circulation route with sidewalks consistent with the requirements of this chapter or open space.
Consistent with the chapter, but if you guys are okay with that, I'll concede it. So read it to me once more. Internal circulation route.
With sidewalks consistent with the requirements of this chapter.
And get rid of the public street part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And then you're saying it occurs again in 5.
So, sorry. I think it's on the second paragraph, right? And I'm thinking of this example and many others that face, usually front doors face exactly the same direction as the garage door. That's because vehicles come in from that direction, and that's how you enter the house. So in this example, and others like it, if I'm reading this right, primary pedestrian entrances shall not face driveways.
Yeah, that's...
How does that work?
That doesn't...
That's a blacktop driveway.
Yeah, in that case, that would not be allowed.
So would every parking area that you have on all these photos, front door faces the parking area?
Yeah, not one of these would be built.
How does that work?
Which, by the way, as you contemplate that, we've got a comma after open space and primary. That should be a period.
Right, right. That's right.
So I would be content if it merely said should versus shall, which again gives staff more ability to be flexible.
Yeah.
I think one of my fears is this is on Bendigo. I don't know if you recognize this. It's right over here.
Yeah.
And before I even started on these standards, I would walk by this every day at work and think, why is there no door on the front side of this building? It's like somebody plopped it down the wrong way. So
she got a permit.
Somehow we need to make sure this doesn't happen.
The story is she got a permit before she got the water moratorium was on, when she got a permit to build. She built expecting water later. That's why it's built that way.
But even beyond that, that's not addressing this particular issue, because that's about the door doesn't face the street at all. This is about not allowing the door to face on the park. This is almost the reverse.
Well, I don't know. You can have the front door face the lane, but you can still have another door that faces parking.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we do have another section.
The requirement is that you have a front door presentable in this style or fashion.
We do have another section that says that each building shall provide a primary pedestrian entrance on the front side of the building. Okay. So that at least would address this.
Address that issue.
What we're saying here again, though, Parkside Townhomes would be a good example of it. That's the primary door. The only other doors in these units are a patio door. Yes, other than a garage door. And so if you're saying it may not face the driveway, alley, or parking area, what do you want them to do? So you either... Then we drive again, so then we're driving public walking traffic behind the units, effectively what's behind the units with a walkway, and now again, there's no limited common privacy.
It's a trade-off. Yeah.
Public. Right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to impose that on folks. I mean, they're already living in a dense situation, and I want to allow them to have some ability to create a small piece of private space.
Mm-hmm. It sometimes has unintended consequences, like everyone wants to park on the street then. Because they're like, well, that's where the door of the building is. That's where I want to walk in, so...
Well, you would have a door in the back. You could have a door in the
right,
back.
Right, so you just can't have the... Is it just the... It's called the primary.
Mm-hmm. Primary pedestrian entrance.
So in this area,
what does that mean?
It looks like
just the door that faces the street.
Well, that's not the word primary. Does that have to look different than if you had a front door and a back door? says primary door.
Yeah, it says earlier, primary pedestrian entrances may serve individual dwelling units or a number of dwelling units in common.
Yeah, and I have another one of the photos that kind of addresses that. There's a throughput, right? There's a common entrance that's serving two units, I believe, or four. So it's somewhere here. But again, that entrance is off of the parking. And this says you can't do it.
So I want to go back to Rob's question about privacy in clustered environment. So the aerial view, we have image, it looks like four units connected, and that is it. Do we have any limitation on connectivity of our units? And
we do have a limit on the number of units within a built group.
10 per building.
Maybe we ought to think about
that's 10.
I think it's ready, yeah.
Because I agree with you on the too much traffic point of view, but if you only have a limited number of units.
As much as it's no more than 10.
It says 10 in the last paragraph of number 3.
Okay.
Last paragraph of number 3.
10.
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So, Jim, to your point, that second paragraph should instead of shall. I'm on four.
Entrances shall. Is that where we are?
Yeah, primary pedestrian entrances. Current language is shall, not face driveways.
There's probably no place in these documents where I'm going to say should anything. Because I just think that way. It's either shall or it's we're not going to talk about it.
Okay. So you support striking the sentence?
Pretty much. If I'm not missing something, if there's existing stuff that we've been, we've already seen examples, it's been done already, where the primary entrance, whether that means it's the front or the side, whatever the primary design entrance is, if that can't face the driveway or an alley or parking area, which is the big bugger, the parking area. I don't know. What's the downside of striking the whole sentence? What's going
to
happen?
Well, I see it as going either way, honestly. I know from a design perspective it's good to have the buildings with entrances that connect directly to a sidewalk rather than just a driveway. But I totally understand the point of private space as well and needing a little bit of a backyard that doesn't open up onto an alley.
And you know, again, I get the motivation. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see those that, you know, hallway design, but I think thou shall is just going too far.
And I, from my perspective, and Jenna may argue with me on this one, but my primary interest is the public realm, not what's happening internal to the development, but how does the development relate to the street. And we have another provision that requires a primary pedestrian entrance facing the street.
Yep.
And that would satisfy that need.
Okay. Good. So we're in agreement. Strike that sentence?
Yeah, we'll fight for it later.
You want to strike it or change it to encourage?
Strike.
Definitely.
Right. Go with Jim. It's not shall, strike it.
And it seems, it's almost, Mike, if you agree, it's almost redundant, but it's confusing. So the first sentence says, that's where they're going to face. The second sentence says, this is where they can't face. Mm-hmm. If they're going to face a certain way, then by definition, they're not going to be facing the other way. Mm-hmm.
Can I offer one edit as well?
Oh.
We say primary.
Of course.
Instead of saying a primary circulation route, I think the intent of that is public street. Unless, is there something else that primary circulation route is intending to be? Because otherwise, we talk about an internal circulation route.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be more clear to just say shall face either a street, public street, an internal circulation route with sidewalks consistent with this chapter?
Shall face either.
Yeah, that's
unclear. Yeah, a public street. Yeah, I would be okay with that. Mm-hmm. Anybody else follow
that?
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so let me read this particular paragraph the way that I'm understanding. So this is number 4, second paragraph. Primary pedestrian entrances with shall face either a public street or a public street, internal circulation route, or open space. Now where's the... let me reread it. Primary pedestrian entrances shall face either a public street, an internal circulation route with sidewalk consistent with this chapter, or open space.
Yeah.
So, my number 5 then on circulation, access, and parking. There's probably a modification we're going to need in here to be consistent with that. So, again, the second paragraph, we've got public street standards again.
Mm-hmm. So, that would. Then, to be consistent, primary residential parking areas shall not front on public streets. And I guess at that point it would be period.
There's no way to have a percentage that can have parking from the public street, just as an option, or you want any, because that just means you have to have a road behind.
Or to the side.
Or not necessarily. I mean, the driveway could come through and come back and have your parking. You don't necessarily have to provide it.
So in the example, if we go with this language, if we just cut it down, the primary residential parking area shall not front on public streets.
So.
Then in the example of, I'm thinking about in the example of a couple of different. Photos that I show where you've got buildings that are essentially between the roadway and the river. So the way that those would be able to build is by pulling the buildings apart, reorienting them, and parking to the side.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. I can live with that. Second sentence, except for single units above garages, off-street parking shall be located to the side or rear of buildings. So again, in most instances, I think that works. In the instance of park side or park place, it doesn't. It's a lot of parking with the residents. Their designs allowed for some units have enough space to be able to park a car in front of them.
And you, to correct that, we could just add, shall be located to the side or rear of buildings fronting public streets.
Okay. At the end. Shall be located to the side or rear of buildings where facing public streets. When or where? Where? Good. Mm-hmm. Much to your relief, I'm done.
I was actually expecting and hoping you might carry on. So if I remember right, the origin of these changes were really to kind of wordsmith and clean up and consolidate and get rid of ambiguity, right?
This doesn't have any elements in it itself. Yeah, you can have them sign that now.
What's your official moving, choosing to move these forward?
Yeah, so do we...
Well, we actually need to take both reports.
So I move we approve chapter 18.34 as revised.
Second.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. I'm actually signing it tonight. Wow. We've been asked to do that.
Think about it.
Would you?
Yeah. She's not taking any chances. All right. Moving on. Public hearing and continued deliberation of marijuana zoning regulations. Seeing no one from the public here, it's going to be very short. I will open the public hearing. I will close the public hearing.
I just want to remind you guys, we also handed a letter out last planning commission meeting from Karen. And just you've read it, but I should remind you of that letter.
Yes. Got it.
Have we received any other public comment?
The same one?
Yeah, just the opening comment from the visitor.
Right. The opening comment from Travis. All right. Is there anything on this that staff has for us tonight?
In front of you, you have the updated buffer zone map. And the immediate change you'll see is marked as before we were coloring the parcels as part of the key, and our fear was that would confuse people and make them think that we were changing the zoning rather than just representing it as something we're buffering. So those have been changed to colored symbols, triangles, to know. And it also kind of tells a better story, I think, and shows actually all the things we really are buffering. You can really see it. But the main thing tonight that we wanted to take away from this was we wanted to know your input and the public's input to be able to go back after this meeting and be able to draft an ordinance and bring it back to you next time.
From the public's perspective, so we got the one letter and we had earlier where I allowed Travis to make some comments on this item that was outside the public hearing. We would take it the same as we would if we had received a letter. So that, to my knowledge, constitutes all of the public input we received. So, commissioners, staff is looking for any other input we might have for them when we go back to start drafting.
So in the last time we discussed this, we talked about adding, or I made a motion to add urban learning centers as somewhere that would receive a buffer. And I went to the U.S. Department of Education website, and I would like to offer a description for what early learning center would be defined as. And that would be the intermediary organization, which means an organization statewide, regional, or community-based that represents networks of early learning and development programs in the state that have influence or authority over those early learning and development programs, including but not limited to child care resource and referral agencies, state Head Start associations, family child care associations, state affiliates of the National Association for the Education of Young Children, state affiliates for the Council for Exceptional Children's Division of Early Childhood, and where appropriate, the National Migrant and Seasonal Head Start Association, the National Tribal, American Indian, and Alaska Native Head Start Association, and the National Indian Child Care Association.
Excellent research here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think it addresses a concern that I had with proposal, even though I supported where you're going with the notion in that, how do you define it? And and watch for anybody just saying, oh yeah, I've got an early childhood learning center here. And I was, so lacking a state certification, I was concerned about that. So do I understand this correctly, that each of the various names being called out here, capitalized, are recognized programs of one type or another, that therefore all fall under this category?
The intent of the motion to add early learning centers to be included in the 1,000-foot buffer does fit within this definition, in my mind, that I was thinking.
How would the city go about identifying these for us to know where they are and how they apply?
I believe Encompass bears the NAEYC certification on their website. I'm not sure about Montessori and how they're defined. I know from the State Department of Learning there are Head Start information available, as well as from the State Department of Education there would be some data for our city. I don't know that that would encompass every possible one, and I look forward to that.
It seems like every child, any entity who manages children is doing it through some form of a license, whether it's an actual school or a daycare. I'm struck by the fact that maybe that somehow we might have missed someone who's got a license to deal with children under whatever the terminology is. So I like this definition. It's nice to know there's an entity spelled out, but how could we have missed it already?
Is it such a thing? So I don't think I'm not getting that. Are they licensed, or is it like is there a certification that they?
Well, some are and some aren't by this definition, but they are charged with that duty mm-hmm. in some way. So there might be a business license, there might be a state license, yeah. but it's not necessarily. Not everyone bears the NAEYC certification, which is one of the hardest to get. And mm-hmm. obviously, when there are harder certifications to get, you
sure.
have less people that will qualify for that mandate. Mm-hmm. I do like the fact that it would include national tribal schools, given the fact that we do have a casino.
I guess my only concern is one of complexity. So again, it's easy to identify what's a school, what's a licensed daycare. But if we start to have a lot of potential referral organizations and other things like that aren't clearly a nice, easy category to say a business license, school, check, it gets a little...
Well, that was exactly where my concern was. I support where Gary's trying to get us in regard to... kind of one of those things, you see it, you get it, you understand what it is, but you don't go out street by street trying to identify, and so how do they get recognized is the question, and I guess so it's the difference between number four, license, or as you're saying, applies in this child care center, and everything that's not a child care center by that definition.
So I guess my reluctance to not include the first definition of paragraph, which was early learning and development program, was exactly that point, because point A is state licensed or state regulated program or provider, and would that language help bring some clarity?
Well, it would to me, because it's saying that that's our marker, that's what we're looking for. If they hold a state license,
yeah,
we can find it, we can resource it, we can identify it, we can make sure that it's excluded. I just don't know if that gets to all the pieces that you were concerned about, which certainly has relevance.
I mean, do any of the others leave interpretation for someone just to say, oh yeah, I'm learning that as well?
Well, I don't have the knowledge.
Sure. When I had Mark make this correction to the map, what I asked them to do was, what you see on the screen here, was defining learning centers as any entity that regularly provides daycare, early learning services, or basic education for children age 18 years or younger. That it's just, it's very broad and simple, and not saying it has to come from a license.
But how did he do that?
That's from the point that we're at now, it's just knowing what's in North Bend already. And we know that basically the only thing that would fall underneath the title that we didn't have on there was Encompass. And in the future, anything that would be coming in, we would be able to flag it because we have it in front of us.
Who is Mark?
Mark's our GIS and CAD technician. He made this map.
He's the map guy. So I'm seeing, let's see if I get it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I think, licensed daycares indicated on the map.
Do we circumvent the specifics by simply coming up with some language that talks about any entity who provides for the care of children?
But I think that's again where it gets.
Well, that's the slope I was on because I'm thinking to myself, I mean, there's lots of quote unofficial, you know, drop the kids off at Aunt Sally's house, and there's five kids playing on the playground.
Right.
But I'm not meaning to ban or create the buffer from those zones. I think that there's an expectation when you bring a child to a specific center that's meant for that activity, that there is that safety around there. But if you're just bringing them over to the friend's house, under the law and the way that was passed by the voters, the use of the product is supposed to occur in the private and residential zones. I'm trying to make sure that in the public zone that we do have the buffers for these young kids.
Somebody's running a Montessori school. There's got to be a license associated. I'm a little still baffled why Encompass doesn't show up. They've got, I'm sure, state licensing in more than one form.
They receive state funds. Mm-hmm.
And I talked with the Department of Early Learning on that, and to understand why they weren't included in, and I wasn't able to. He wasn't able to explain that further to me, but other than they didn't meet their entire standards and they weren't certified. So, in that instance, how would you guys want to proceed if that happened?
This is really great about reading that. I was all the way down the road. You know what? If the liquor board's going to run this, I can imagine going into the QFC one day, instead of getting whatever whiskey, I order a certain package of marijuana. That makes some sense. Until the point comes up where I can actually go out on the street and smoke it on the way home. I can't go tilting the bottle back on the way home. So I think about how does this really work in the daily lives of people who live in neighborhoods now whose next door neighbor, just because of zoning lines, ends up being a marijuana purveyor, medical or otherwise, or even a small-time distributor. There's trucks coming in. There's really no smell. It's just the guy's packaging or whatever else is going on. I know there's overlays like home-based businesses and a whole bunch of different things that kind of get filtered in here. But my only energy at all is the people who are already here, the property owners who are already here, they should not be impacted negatively because we happen to be one of the first towns on the radar to be the guinea pig. So let's go try it all out here at North Bend.
Don't know who we are.
That's the same case I'd make for all the commercial stuff that's being talked about.
I hear your point, but I almost would want to say maybe some of those same long-term residents are ones that are looking forward to having that opportunity to use the product. That said, what I understand the reports from Colorado, there are certain residents in apartments that are having issues because the smell is pungent, you're using it in their private home, but yet it's filtrating into your own apartment. You know, and that something maybe we ought to look at.
This isn't addressing consumption at all.
Yeah, no, I'm not worried about that.
No, I'm just saying in the future.
Hey, we're stuck in your backyard and the wind blows over, so, what happens?
So,
selling it.
Can I suggest, so I still like where you're trying to get to. And I think maybe we just hand it to staff and say, can you do a little, push it a little further, because we're stuck on, particularly on why an agency like Encompass is widely recognized for all the different services they do, doesn't show up on the map. It doesn't make sense, right? And because that one doesn't, it's leaving the worry in the head of, you know, what else may be out there of a similar nature that's being missed. And I don't want to miss it.
We've included, it's on this map. We've included it on this map based on your changes. But I understand from the state.
But only from us saying, hey, where is it? I mean, mm-hmm. Not because you have another touch point, right? And that's the worry is, well, why did it not show up until we said, well, wait a minute, we've got this city.
Maybe it's because they offer more service than just early on.
Does anyone know the place called, I believe it's called the Spanish Academy? It may be outside the city limits. But that's another, you know, lots of kids get dropped off certain times of the day. It's a school environment, Spanish immersion process. But, it's several things that are on the fringe of what is it that they're doing, but they're dealing with kids.
But they should still have some kind of license.
Yeah.
And so I would be amenable to offering the definition to the staff to define with the requirements of which they need in order to regulate it successfully. My preference would be to take the first paragraph definition for development program and model it after point A, which includes state license or state regulated program or provider. I think that would provide some at least concrete way for them to say yes or no, you're in or you're out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
The other one I was recalling from, recall from reviewing the staff report, and I didn't recall that you had brought it up, and I'm presuming you did, around churches and religious entities. It says specifically the churches and religious entities are a playground and a recreational center facility. It's curious, the state chose not to call out churches, which is often common for this type of thing. Do we have any knowledge on why they chose not to use?
I think that's been brought up by a lot of cities, and I don't think there's been a clear answer on it. If I could guess from the talks that we've had with our attorneys, it's the being able to really define what a church or a religious institution is and the difficulty being able to implement that, which is why we have here, and it is difficult to do, but anything that has a recreational center or facility on that church's property. And that's how we've gone about identifying it.
Is it open to the public, or
So, for example, if a church would have a playground that can be used by anybody, or Boy Scouts can come and they can have, they're there regularly. It's something that can be used regularly. That's how we identified it.
It's when you're talking about a private facility, and particularly. I don't know if we get into church-state issues with that as well. I don't know. I get the notion, and again, it doesn't feel egregious to me, but it feels like a little bit worrisome.
Can I shift a little bit on the conversation on the to your point of personal use, go for it. To the point of neighbors, and there's, if I look in the gaps here on the map, you focus on the gaps, you find available uses. What in neighborhoods where there's single family homes, in the gap, I'm assuming that processing and production probably won't happen just for
it's not space. In a commercial zone.
right?
If it were in a commercial zone and it were not in the buffer area.
Okay. And then the sales part, home-based business, which is what brought us all here in the first place, how is that situated now? What's the update in the gap where somebody wants to run a home-based business?
Home occupation, selling marijuana.
Yeah.
It's not a lot. Home occupation is not a lot of home occupation.
Home-based business.
Thank you. It's not a lot of this business.
Okay.
So it's not a lot in the residential zone, period.
So then
and they call it home occupation.
Okay. So then the residential zone, my concern about, Aunt Sally taking care of the kids, if she's in a residential zone, she's taken care of. That's not going to happen in any way, shape, or form, right? There's not going to be a sales or distribution or anything next door to Aunt Sally's unofficial daycare.
Well, as long as she she's in a residential zone.
They could be across the street down on the east end.
Yeah. I'm wondering if we've got the bubbles backwards. What I was looking at is to the point of residential. It's like, why haven't we just expanded our bubble net? Because it's not allowed in residential at all. Why isn't that?
Well, the residential zones have been taken off the map, so they're not, the color is not on there, so they're not being considered.
They've been faded to the background. Mm-hmm. But
why doesn't the bubble just highlight that same area as not permitted?
Well, I was starting to say, why don't we fill the gap in the bubble, right? Because it's residential between these. And then I started thinking, well, maybe we ought to just be depicting the reverse. We ought to just be highlighting where is allowed, not where it's not.
Right. And we did propose that in the beginning, but I think it was, people felt like it was too confusing. I wasn't here at that meeting. At one point, we did have a map that showed that. And we can certainly bring that back. Or have both.
Well, I think I can shed light on why it's done this way. Because the impetus was to demonstrate that it is allowed in certain areas. And then it's up to the applicant to figure out the rest, right? And then keeps us off the legal hook. Conversely, if we tell the public where it is allowed and it's not.
The whole notion here is it's focused on the commercial zones.
Yeah.
So, I get it. Okay. And it hasn't changed much of anything. It still comes down to there's two, three places where this can be allowed.
Well, but yeah, and to further the point I was making, we can't demonstrate where it's allowed and then take it away. Right? We can't put a map out that says it's okay here and then change our minds without having cause.
Yeah, for future business we could.
Right. But I'm just saying, what would be the parameter that we'd say it's allowed today and then it's not allowed? So I can.
Well, I think that was one of the questions that we had asked, which was what is grandfathering. So if it's allowed and it gets permitted and it's a running business, and now a daycare center opens, it continues on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless it closes for more than
1 year.
1 year,
yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
So, do we want to lay out what can go where on our map? As far as manufacturing or retailing?
We made a few suggestions at our last meeting.
That would be helpful. That would be helpful for our job, yes. Yini said it would be helpful if you identified where you would like to see producers and processors go in retail, if you have an opinion. And something you may want to think about is the size. They have tiers on their sizing for producers, and those tiers were three different levels.
If we used marijuana as any other agricultural product, where does that leave us? If we just forget the term marijuana and just say agricultural product, production or processing.
That's another zoning category, but because this is specific and there's state laws applicable to it, we call it out as a specific use.
But is it going to end up being different, though, is my question.
If I wanted to
grow corn in a greenhouse, where could I do it and not be able to grow marijuana in a greenhouse right now?
Well, right now we don't define where marijuana can be grown or not, but we do have zones that allow agriculture.
Okay, which zones?
So which are those? So yeah.
I could have a hydroponic greenhouse, is
yeah.
what you're saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there could be an EP1, EP, or EP2. I don't think we have one.
So, business.
So we're talking about producers. Can we take it as producers first?
Start from
producer, a marijuana producer license allows the production of marijuana for sale at wholesale to marijuana license processor licensees and to other marijuana producer licensees.
Sure.
EP1 and EP2, but not IC.
Yeah, I can stand the bottom.
Yeah, I don't think I want it in the interchange.
So, and I think my first suggestion had been EP2.
Yeah.
But there seemed to be some thought that maybe on behalf of staff that there might be areas of EP1 and other areas of EP1 to not. So I wanted to see if.
We're just taking a look to where agriculture is permitted already. Farmland, pasture, and crop uses.
So if it's EP1, you'd be here.
All
right.
Do you have a cup of it
in
here?
Yeah. There's the river buffer. Over here, we've got residential here. These are all residential houses.
We're just doing an overlay to allow residential.
Isn't that where the river is?
That's
interesting.
Table. I knew that my table of uses would come in handy tonight.
It's at the very bottom. Under farm uses. I think. You go to 6.0 resource, farmland, pasture, crop uses.
Christmas tree farms, commercial farms, commercial greenhouse, wholesale, farmland, pasture, crop use, garden, public gardens, temporary resource buildings and uses. So I see all of those things permitted in neighborhood business. Business, the USOD, and the EP1, and in the transitional overlay MPOD.
I'm sorry, did you say that marijuana producers are not allowed in residential, or was that retailers?
All of the above.
All of the above. So it looks like we would need to make a line then as a new marijuana grower? Because it wouldn't fit in any of those other boxes.
Right. There would be need to be amendment to the table. We're also thinking that we need to be added in the subsection to Chapter 18.
It's the 7.0, essentially. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would make sense. And then you get three items in, right? Producers, distributors, and retail.
Those processes are making the right.
So I would be fine with producers in EP1 and EP2.
Because that's allowed for most of the other production as well.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's where we have to.
I don't think there's many usable spots in there, but.
What's stopping us from just pairing up alcohol
insert the word. We have that covered in here.
We have already. We already have that in other sections.
Alcohol's everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. We have food and beverage manufacturing as a category.
That's good.
So where would that be?
Or food.
But just thinking about the growing aspect of it,
yeah,
which is so unique.
Agricultural
and we, if it's not going to relate to any other farming operations, which could be permitted in residential zones, then we need to.
Well, to Jim's point, where is the section that covers
food and beverage
production, not retail, but production?
Distilling. Yeah, that's under industrial, section 3.16, food and beverage products.
Products, okay.
In one of the zones it's in.
So that's allowed in neighborhood business, downtown commercial, EP1 and EP2. By state law, we wouldn't be allowed in DC, according to the map, but there would be areas of NB that would allow it. With NB being a zone that has residential as well as business. I wouldn't support this one there.
This
brings back the same conflict that I have all the time. We're ahead of the curve, right? We're in a place, the state is, Colorado along with us to some degree. All of my energy is about that because we're so on the edge of what's going to happen next. Go back to the prohibition story, right? How crazy was it when that was getting going again? I don't know the answer. I see no reason not to pair it up with alcohol, but at the same time,
So what if we start to get something on the table for conversation? What if we start with direction to staff that they should pair up with 3.16? Understand that you want to create a separate line item, but put the P's in the same boxes.
So you're talking about processing and production at this point, but not necessarily sales?
I was only talking about producer, but if we want to group them together and consider that.
That's where I have a hard time drawing the line, is like, if like you can have sell alcohol in a spot, why couldn't you sell this? I mean, that for us to cherry pick places, that's where I seem to fall more like, if you can do alcohol there, then you should be able to do this. Those are looking
at
the
same. There's a proof restriction, too, right? You can't sell grain alcohol from the brewery. Right? You can't.
Can you even buy grain?
You know what I'm saying? Like, beer and wine, but,
right.
But you can't cross over to the 40 proof spirits.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how that
is. But alcohol is permitted in downtown commercial. So that's where.
But that's not going to matter anyway for us.
So the first question that Mike had, though, was really, are we lumping together producer or processor? In my mind, I couldn't really draw the distinction as far as the way we would zone it.
I would agree. I don't see a difference. Producer is a grower, and processor might refine it or package it.
Still not about sales, about retail sales, right?
EP1 or EP2.
So can we give that direction that those two go together and we start off with the same as food and beverage? Okay? All right, great. Retailer.
That seems like we should start off with the same as alcohol, and I guess we would even put downtown commercial there, even though if we shouldn't differentiate, we shouldn't look at buffers right now. We should just say if we're going to,
well, specifically,
if we're treating it the same, if that's the opinion.
Well, we could apply that zone to a different area, too.
Right.
That it might be permitted in, so. If it's not permitted in downtown commercial, but we extend downtown commercial.
You'd have a hard time extending it far enough.
All the way down North Bend Way.
So I get the concept. I'm okay with that. Or do we cut to the chase and say, well,
I think for simplicity,
that wouldn't make any sense.
We don't want to create mislead people.
So I would suggest instead that we say IC. anybody wanted to make an argument that it ought to include IMU, then...
But can you have any kind of... So just an EP 1 and 2 doesn't allow for retail uses, is that...
No, well...
Well, I would object to a retail establishment in EP 1 and 2 because those are our industrial zones, right? Right?
But I'm just making sure that, like, it wouldn't be allowed for anything else either.
Other types of retail.
Right.
We could do retail sales incidental to processing and producing. That we've done that with a number of other things that are in the manufacturing type of things that have incidental sales.
Right.
But the primary use is what we govern. So
like the distiller that's out in that zone, could they ever have like a showroom that they would be able to sell something off of?
Well,
yeah.
In this case, the state regulates that. So producer...
Okay.
Would only be able to sell to the processor.
Okay, so we don't have to worry about
that. So for instance, to the point, so I went to section 2.0, which is the commercial, and just, you know, looking at a couple of them quickly at a glance. Restaurants essentially are not allowed in EP 1 and 2 except for coffee stands as a freestanding accessory. Retail is not allowed. And then we do have the wholesale sales with ancillary associated retail, whatever that means, is a permitted use in 1 and 2.
So my concern with IMU,
that's wholesale, right?
And IC is that they are so close to the interstate, and given the troubles with banking, that it's going to make it possibly a risky situation.
With banking?
Keeping cash on hand.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is that a factor, I guess? Those are security measures that they need to set up if they're going to choose to have business.
So, why was it? Where is it they couldn't take credit cards? Credit card companies were not accepting those transactions. So, these businesses were sitting on a boatload of cash.
Yeah, well, luckily, there are banks right in the IC as well. But I hear you then. If you take that logically, then what you'd be saying is that it's in the small area neighborhood business would be the only place to do it. I don't know if the concern is armed robbery. I don't know that really...
Yeah, I don't know that that's... I'm just... putting it out there.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I want to not forbid it. I just think, I don't know if that's the wisest choice, but we're limited with so many choices.
Yeah.
So how would you feel if Jack Daniels opened up its number 2 distillery just between here and Choctaw?
Well,
how would that be viewed?
I'd think of it differently with the propensity for drinking and driving in that case, and getting up.
Well, they're not selling it.
Well, they're not selling it.
They have a tasting room.
Maybe. I thought we were talking about retailers now.
Yeah. Well, that was the retailer in the industrial kind of mix.
Well, just Megan brought up that a processor cannot sell retail under state law.
Yeah.
It's
a very bright line distinction. That's what you're saying.
Okay. They're not really distinguishing that very line.
So again, in regard to retail, so our retail section 2.26 is permitted in NB, AC, IC, IMU, and USOD, and transitional overlay MEOD.
So DC is not an option.
DC is not an option, so there's no sense putting a P in that box.
And I don't know, do we have any indication how many retail licenses we might get as a city yet?
We do. North Bend has not been allotted based on our population to have a retail section. So we're a part of that lottery. So there's 11 at large for the entire King County. So our chances are very small, and there have been people who are interested in opening retail. To my knowledge, from what I can remember, at the moment, all of those are within a buffer zone. However, they do have the opportunity to change their address, I believe.
How many cities are in the county?
Lots.
So, guys, are we okay with that? That in regard to retail, follow retail other than where it is already precluded by the. Let's start there. Okay.
Anything else we need to do? Performance standards.
That's going to be a whole different kettle of fish. Yes, we've got to look at that in a different.
Skip it over back to there.
Yes,
are we good? Are we good to move on?
Just one.
I have no idea. Are we on to the next agenda item?
That's what I'm asking. Are we ready to move on?
Is there anything further?
Okay. Number six, reintroduction, CenturyLink comprehensive plan, land use designation and zoning amendments.
Yeah,
consideration requested by the CDD Council Committee.
You guys will recognize this one. This came through as a docket a year ago. And you recall Planning Commission recommended denial until it was annexed. CenturyLink came back to us and said, well, what if we annex? Will you support these amendments? So we took that question to the CED Council Committee, and they were generally supportive of it, wanted to bring it back to the Planning Commission to talk about possibly not doing it at the same time as requiring annexation, because what the intent would be to try to wrap it in with our 2013 comprehensive plan amendments, which are going to be going to Council in April. The reasons for that, going back to why would we recommend approval on this, just again that the pre-annexation zoning is an obligation for the city to determine. So we are responsible for the zoning throughout our urban growth boundary, and for future properties to annex, they want the certainty of what they're annexing to. They don't want to have to annex and then try to come into the city and say, well, we'd like to do this and change the zoning. So the Planning Commission should make a recommendation on whatever zoning is most appropriate to that area, given planning considerations. And our recommendation as staff is to divorce that from the requirement for annexation. It's because that we want to do what makes sense.
So, in the regardless of what our zoning says about it, any development that occurs on it now is under the county.
Correct.
What is the county zoning?
County zoning right now is urban reserve, which is basically residential. So they could not do a commercial use.
So the county would be guaranteed almost to not grant any permit outside of residential use, right?
So if this were to, if they were to seek a commercial use on the site, they would still have to annex to the city to be subject to the commercial zoning.
So I have a question of why IMU was recommended.
IMU was recommended because that's what the adjacent zone is. If you look on the zoning map over there, that's the light blue, and to the north is the Safeway complex, the Dr. O property. Those are all zoned IMU. So generally, with zoning, you want to make it consistent with what's adjacent to it. We also provided, as you recall, some restrictions on the types of uses that would be allowed because of its location on a dead-end street, a little bit further away from the primary commercial area. I think the applicant is interested to see more commercial uses. They're going to come to the public hearing. They'll make their petition. Ultimately, what the Planning Commission decides on that, you can consider other factors than what's in just the staff report. If you feel that it's more that it's appropriate to go back to more commercial uses and not have those specific restrictions on the higher intensity commercial uses like retail, restaurant, hotels. That's something that could be considered.
The thinking on the non-permitted business uses, is that because there are going to be more high traffic?
Right. Yeah, the intent was to limit the impacts to adjacent residential properties.
So, you know, back when we looked at this originally, remind the commissioners, you know, we kind of cut off the discussion around these extra performance standards because we all pretty quickly came to the consensus that we were going to recommend not until annexation, and so we kind of moved in that direction and didn't finish that discussion. And so that's certainly one of the reasons that the CED committee sent it back to us, was to say, hey, we hear you, that you didn't really kind of go all the way through that, and so give it a second look and give us a recommendation back. And so that was, again, and that was in conversation at the CED committee that I attended and kind of refreshed on. And so that's kind of where that went. I recall at the time that I was myself, I was not too inclined towards adding additional burdens on that. I thought IMU was fine, and for kind of two reasons. One, I felt it's got the right allowable uses already identified. Mitigation such as the roadway would come through any development proposed. They're going to have to deal with the traffic analysis, and that's kind of the direction that I was leaning. I guess I also have that philosophical barrier of continually carving up and adding special conditions to this piece versus that piece of property, and it starts to feel like spot zoning, and that worries me. So
I also recall that we had the discussion of, I mean, I know it's in the adjacent property, but it leaves an island down here. I recall just talking about doing the whole kind of triangle down there.
Yeah, and I think that makes more sense personally.
The way. I think three of those neighbors came in to speak about that.
There was one across the street that came in.
Yeah, none, sure. None of the owners.
But none of the ones
that I recall, none of the owners on the south side came in. But it was, yeah, those neighbors.
It only helps their properties, gives them more options. But
it just seems that you've got the interstate right there, so if we're saying that, I think it makes sense that that's more commercial. And if we were to change use, and someone had a choice, that would probably go commercial.
But the impact that it would have to existing residential properties is the tax consequences. So the tax to highest and best use.
What I wanted to ensure, because I like Scott's expressing, is that it seems to make sense to me. That's the right thing to do from the 50,000 feet. But yes, it's got tax implications. What I wanted to ensure is that all of those neighbors have the opportunity to join in an annexation petition if they should so choose, and therefore they need to be aware of the process and what we're looking at. And what I recall is when we kind of drew the line of notice, one, maybe, and perhaps it was two, fell outside of the, the notice line, and you advised the council that we can't make exceptions, and we start getting ourselves into trouble for why did this person get a notice and not that one, and so I still get all of that, but I'm still struggling with, yes, but these folks, they should know. They should be aware that there's an option for them to say, hey, we want to be commercial too, or not.
Well, if you're talking about specific properties that could be included, we could certainly contact those property owners to say, we have this rezone before the Planning Commission. Are you interested to participate in that?
And perhaps that's the best vehicle for it, is if we say, hey, we want them included,
exactly.
Then you've got a notice on it, right?
And then we can get some of them. I think that's the way.
Yeah.
I still had the same opinion I had then. I get why they want to improve their land value before they go to market.
Right.
Basic idea. But if our process is involved in it, It would be as if every neighbor in town decides, well, I'm close enough to this zone, so I'm talking to them about rezoning before I put my place on the market. But in this case, they're completely out of our, quote, jurisdiction.
No, they're not.
Okay,
help me with that. They are in our urban growth area, and we are responsible for all the zoning, pre-annexation and within city limits,
okay,
in our urban growth area.
But we're not the permitting body for whatever happens.
If they want to do commercial, we're the permitting body because they would have to annex in order to develop under our commercial zoning.
Okay, but that's the part before the horror story that we dealt with before.
They're
basically saying, do this, and then we'll be annexed.
So, right? So what the council committee looked at was a rough estimate of what the city stands to lose, in a transaction based on that, is the REIT money, which I think this references $4,000 or $5,000, and they felt that alone wasn't sufficient to be hanging the hat on. They weren't as concerned about that particular thing, and that the idea that to get development going there and to get it, the opportunity is commercial, and therefore if we did zone it to commercial, that may encourage the sale, that would encourage the annexation, and that would then bring us.
So that's a different approach. That's not a landowner coming to us saying, I want to be commercial. That's us going, you know, you brought this to our attention, now let's review this. It's a whole different analysis. I'm good with that.
Yeah. Absolutely. This was driven by the landowner.
I think what's unique, too, is it's not just like it's a residential landowner next to it, of course, saying, oh, I want to be commercial now, too. There's already a commercial.
There is a commercial building
there. It's there. It's not like it's, you know, and that's what also makes me then, okay, well, it makes a lot of sense to bring the other ones in. I mean, even though they're not asking for it.
So, Mike, can you clarify? You said that they would be taxed on the highest and best use, but if they're not in our city, the zoning can't take effect until they're annexed.
Correct.
So why would they be taxed before the zoning takes effect?
They would not be taxed at that rate until annexation occurred.
And then they would be.
Mm-hmm.
So they still would have two choices. So the same kind of a scenario then is that, so we could rezone all those properties to commercial. Nothing really changes without an annexation petition. CenturyTel property owners, or these two parcels, come in and they ask for annexation. Now those adjoining neighbors have a choice: join the annexation or continue to stay out. They stay out, again, no change to their impact, right? Because they're still outside the city, they're still then under the county as they are.
That swallows a lot easier though.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It still seems logical, but it's the individual property owner's ultimate choice.
So is the direction from the Planning Commission to contact those property owners then on the freeway side of that street, South Fork Avenue Southwest?
Yes.
And ask, do you want to participate in this?
Yes.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
So, I guess this is a point of process. How do you, if we look at the map and we walk the land and we have a sense of, hey, look, this really should be commercial. That's the best use of the land, assuming not somebody's not living there, like that changing room. How do we approach that other than just asking the neighbors what their opinion is? Is that the first step of the process? You can't really do it without asking them, obviously.
We'd have to contact them and say, okay, this is pending. Do you want to join or do you want to remain residential?
Okay, and if one in the middle says, no, I'm going to stay residential, does that change?
Ultimately, the decision comes back to the recommendation of the Planning Commission for the whole thing that goes to council. So
I can say I'm certainly not looking to impose.
Sure.
But I want them to have the knowledge and the option.
Yeah.
And if any of those residents should say, I don't want that done to me, then I would be the first to vote to keep it out.
Yeah. Okay.
So where's this go next? Are we getting a whole public hearing?
We are. We've got a public hearing scheduled for your next meeting. And we'll let those property owners know ahead of that public hearing so they can agree to come to that.
Great. I hope the letter does lay out the scenario that we discussed so that they understand. At least we need to make sure that should they come, that staff's able to articulate it. Okay. Anything else on that? Just before adjournment, I'm going to put back to the usual harp. I noticed it was funny because of the attachments in tonight's packet. I noticed that in a prior meeting, back May 9th, 13th, we had requested an update on sewer water capacity. And so I'll renew, a year later almost, request for an update on sewer and water capacity so that we better understand what changes were, you know, putting us up.
Water capacity, our public works, is it water capacity? I don't know.
State
sewer
of the water
capacity
is good.
Yes. Sewer capacity, public works is evaluating right now. And there are some unknowns about what the ultimate capacity is, whether or not we have capacity to serve development in the pipeline. So Frank is going to be.
So I guess the question is they're working on it. When do we anticipate ever hearing?
We hope to have to know in about 6 months a better picture of the capacity.
Great answer.
Do we have a secondary location, or do we need a plan for a secondary location?
That's all to be determined.
So that's a shocking answer, because 2 years ago now, when we formally came out of moratorium, there was clear and hoorahs for 50 years of projected allocations. Something mm-hmm. changed.
There may be some deficiencies in the existing plant facilities that's relating to this. I honestly don't know. I'm not the one that's involved in the study. Or
who's running the study and who generates?
Public Works is looking into the capacity issues.
They hired a consultant, is mm-hmm. correct?
This is like a deja vu, somebody else remembered about 15 years ago.
Well, my memory is, or understanding is that the calculations that were done were not done with hiring or doing an actual study evaluation. More internal calculations. And things change. Plants age.
Yeah.
Valuation from the states change. So I think that's what got us to here. But that's why I keep harping on it, that I don't want myself to be in the position that we've merrily marched down the road of approving additional development. We say, let's reach out here and annex this and that, and then we find out we're way over
here,
and
then
we're right back in a moratorium, and this time it's sewer instead of water. I don't want to be the person that helped.
So just to clarify, you're talking sewer?
Sewer.
Okay. I was hearing water.
Well, I'm asking sewer and water, they're both related. We all have an assumption that water's there.
I believe we're probably going to redo the treatment plant. I don't know. It's not a surprise. But the water is going to be a shocker, though.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order? Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. We're closed. Cool.